Hello, and welcome to Blast Podzine's newest feature, The Wide World of Retorts. I'm your host, Mondo Lee. And this segment will be a bit of a departure from what we've done with past segments. So instead of me interviewing a guest, I'll instead engage in a debate with my guest. And to kick off the show, I've invited none other than my brother, Dr. Russell Lee. And so Russell and I will be debating two issues on today's show. And let's get started. Welcome, Russell. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Now, is it okay for me to call you Russell, or do I have to call you Dr. Lee? What's your preference there?
You can call me Russell this one time, okay?
Just this one time. Okay, thank you. And for, you know, those of you who don't know, Russell is my older brother. He's been a doctor for a long time, a very talented physician, surgeon, in fact, and also a very knowledgeable person. And one of the reasons why I wanted to have Russell on this show is that I thought, who better to kick off a debate show than someone who I've been debating with for pretty much my entire life. So that's one of the reasons why Russell was a good choice for this, as well as the fact that being my brother, he was kind of available. So you know, you work with the talent you can get. So it's a good thing, but I think it's going to be a good debate. So the first, we're going to cover two topics on today's show. The first of which Russell is going to kick off and I'll retort. And then the second topic, I'll kick off and then Russell will do the retort. And the first topic is billionaires. Who needs them and who wants them? So Russell, have at it, please.
Well, first of all, you know, billionaires, I realize that's a somewhat arbitrary number, but my point is not that we don't need billionaires per se, but that there should be a limit to the amount of wealth someone is able to accumulate. When someone is able to accumulate an obscene amount of money, I'm using the word obscene advisedly, then they gain power over the political system that is undue. Now, I'm not saying that there's some giant conspiracy out there between the billionaires and the politicians. My point is that politicians are much more likely to defer to someone with a lot of money. And the more money, the more likely they're going to refer someone who's contributed to them. And when there's a close call, it'll go in favor of the billionaires. So it's just that much power concentrated in such a small number is unconscionable. And the trend is not reversing. So you have a point now, which I think is highlighted by this most recent COVID-19 situation, where if you're not a billionaire, you can live a week, 2 weeks without you know, becoming desperate. And I think that's where we are now for a lot of
people. Now, isn't that a bit of a, I mean, so yeah, I mean, obviously billionaires don't have to worry about becoming desperate, you know, going a few weeks without income. But I mean, I think there's a huge gap between those who can last, you know, only have resources to last for a few weeks, and those who have infinite resources. I mean, aren't you overlooking the very large and affluent middle class that we currently have? And that's all come about really since the same time that the billionaires have exploded, you know, since 1980.
I would say that the middle class is not as large as it was in the 1980s. I didn't really look into that as a fact, but it would be my guess that the middle class is not as large as it was in the 1980s, that there's an affluent middle class, but the trend is toward I don't think it ever would become where there's only the very rich and everyone else is poor, but that is the trend that we're seeing, whereas the lower half of the income ladder is paying a much larger share into the government, while the upper half is reaping huge benefits from the government, paying less and less effective in taxes. I mean, you see capital gains taxes are taxed at a much lower rate than ordinary income. You can get a pass-through income. All these favor the very wealthy as opposed to the average person.
Well, you know, and so allow me to retort. I don't disagree with the favorable treatment that billionaires receive under our current system. I mean, that's been well documented. And frankly, wealthy people have always received favorable treatment, which enables them to not only keep their wealth, but to grow it. However, I don't understand how you or anyone else could determine, as you put it, what is an obscene amount of wealth or what is undue power. I think that having, power and influence is a natural outgrowth of wealth accumulation. And I think that once you have decided to accept capitalism as your system, then you are unable to avoid wealth accumulating in the hands of a few. I mean, that's just the way capitalism works. People who are innovative, people who are adept at manipulating the system, people who are just outright lucky, you know, born with the right parents, are going to accumulate wealth. And once you have wealth, it just makes it easier to get more wealth. So you have that multiplier effect and you end up with, people, like I forget the exact statistic, but you have like the 1% of that owns or has about, what is it, 2/3 of the wealth of the country, something like that. So I don't know how you avoid that without just getting rid of capitalism altogether.
Well, let me just say something here. Now, you might think from my comments that I'm some kind of a raging socialist, and I am not. I agree with capitalism that it is an efficient way of distributing goods and services to people, and I really can't think of another way to do that efficiently. However, my problems with this, the unchecked nature of capitalism, and you say that that's just a natural outgrowth of capitalism, that this concentration of wealth, that the powerful are going to do things in their own favor. I mean, I'm paraphrasing what you said, but I think, does that get to the point of what you were saying?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. So, yeah. So, but knowing that, is there any way to put a control on it? I mean, you could say that just cruelty is a natural outgrowth of wealth accumulation. I mean, if you look historically, people have accumulated a lot of power, have been capable of doing horrible things, but we don't encourage that in the society. We don't encourage our leaders to, massacre people. In fact, it's frowned upon. And yet, that was something that might have at one time seemed like what a ruler does, holds his subjects to account through violence, if necessary. Hopefully now we've largely moved beyond that. And I say the same thing needs to be done to examine capitalism. And yes, have I fleshed it all out? No, because what is an obscene amount of wealth? How do you reward people, who either who have a combination of the luck, innovation, and drive to become billionaires? How do you reward those people? And those are all very good questions. But I think that this accumulation of wealth at the top is unsustainable if you want to have a healthy society.
Well, I mean, first off, I'm not buying your comparison of the excessive accumulation of wealth to the violence that used to be inflicted upon people by the ruling class. I mean, violence has a personal impact on my life. if a king decrees that, they're going to execute peasants and I'm one of the peasants, then that sucks. And I am personally and devastatingly impacted by it. However, I don't know if I'm personally and devastatingly impacted by Bill Gates, say, being worth $50 billion or Jeff Bezos being worth that.
I can give you an example of that.
Well, let me finish. What I would say is that I, like yourself, I think, we're both professionals living relatively decent lives. And the fact that there are, there's an army of mega billionaires out there has not negatively impacted my life.
Well, I would say that it has, because the billionaires, when they're able to lower tax revenues, then you suffer with worsened services. I mean, is it coincidental that wealth is so concentrated, especially in this country, and there's no social safety net? There's no social safety net to speak of as a result of that. I mean, your impact when you drive your car down the road and your axle breaks because there's a huge pothole. Now, I know you're probably going to say, oh, that's a big stretch between, poorly maintained roads and someone having huge having a huge fortune, but I would say there's a direct link between the terrible infrastructure that we're seeing here. You know, anywhere from we're behind on internet access, behind a lot of countries. The roads are horrible. I went to LaGuardia Airport. It looked like a third world airport. I mean, all of these things, possibly if the government had access to more money, to these billionaires' fortunes, then that would be lessened. So you are impacted by that. You know, when you have to take your car to get it repaired because of a poorly maintained road, or, you know, you're, well, just being present in LaGuardia Airport is horrible.
Yeah, I mean, and you sound like a lot like a male version of Elizabeth Warren with that with that argument.
I like my Liz.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. I knew that actually. I know you were an early supporter of her, but I can't argue with the fact that if the government in theory had more money available, it could address some of those shortcomings. You know, it could shore up infrastructure. It could expand access to broadband, healthcare, all of those things. However, even without taking money away from those who have accumulated a lot of it, we still have tremendous resources available to us in this country. So it's not a if or then kind of scenario that, you know, but for, you know, Bill Gates having $50 billion, we would be able to fund road improvement. We still have resources to do those things. And I would say also that you have many who are members of the billionaire class who are very altruistic. I mean, what about the good guy billionaires like a Warren Buffett or even a Bill Gates, who have, I think they pledged to give their fortunes away when they die. And they also have funded a lot of philanthropic, hope I said that word right, activities. So what about that?
Well, I'm not one to say. I began by saying, I'm not saying this is some vast conspiracy, you know, where the billionaires sit down, you know, with the senators at their feet and tell them what to do, and, you know, or the, you know, the president. I am not one to say that this is a vast conspiracy. But it is, I think, you know, I mean, I don't know, I hate to say rigged, but in some ways it is, in that, you alluded to that if you're wealthy, you can't, I mean, if you're wealthy, you're going to, you know, do what you can to help yourself get ahead and gain more, and you are going to use the system in your favor. As far as the philanthropic aspect, of course, I don't think billionaires are monsters. I think that they want to leave a mark. They want to be remembered as having done something. I mean, it's a long history of wealthy people, anywhere from the Rockefeller Foundation, Carnegie Foundation, the Gates Foundation. You mentioned that. Yeah, so I'm not saying they're all monsters. I'm saying that the cumulative effect of that kind of concentration of power is to concentrate it further. And that's what I'm against. So I'm not even against capitalism. I think that it needs to be well regulated, and we need to, as a society, keep an eye on that kind of accumulation of power and wealth and put the brakes on it.
Well, okay, you say put the brakes on it. Easier said than done. I mean, I think if you have excessive regulation that, in fact, that impedes the accumulation of wealth, then I think you create a disincentive for innovation, for the products and things that have made our lives so much better that also have resulted in great wealth. I mean, you take a look at who's the young guy who created Facebook? Zuckerberg, Mark Zuckerberg. I mean, you can argue whether or not Facebook has enhanced our lives or you know, maybe dragged us down. But nonetheless, it is something that everyone, just about everyone nowadays, uses and enjoys. And at the same time, it's made him incredibly wealthy. So would Zuckerberg have been motivated to go out and create Facebook for the rest of us had he known that, you know, King Dr. Russell Lee would put a cap on what he could make? I mean, I don't know. What impact do you think having a cap or, you know, some type of regulatory break, if you will, as you put it, on what you can make would have on people, on the innovators, people who innovate?
I think it would have absolutely none. I mean, look historically. After World War II, what was the top marginal tax rate? I think it was like 80-90%.
Yeah. Yep.
And it'll be in that stopped under Reagan. So between 1945 and 1980, I guess there was no innovation. Microsoft wasn't created in the 70s because Bill Gates said, oh, they're going to take 90% of my income. I'm not doing this, when he's in his garage creating Microsoft. Or, I don't know, there are countless other things. The microwave was invented during that time period. I don't know. What else? We had the space program. True, that was government, but
personal computers. You had a whole lot of innovation during that time.
Yes, I mean, there was huge innovation, and there was a lot of money made by people. But I don't see that as being realistic. I mean, I hear that all the time. So someone's going to say, "Oh, I have an opportunity for an invention that's going to make me famous. It's going to, bring me more money than most other people in the world. But I'm not going to do it because I won't have 2 billion. I only have 1 billion, or wherever we come with a cutoff point. I mean, does that seem likely to you?"
Well, maybe Bill Gates would have created Microsoft 20 years earlier, but for the high tax rate.
Yeah. So he's lazy and sitting around his house because he's waiting for the tax rates to go down. Why did he wait another? Well, I guess he couldn't predict that Reagan would become president.
I mean, no one could have predicted that probably. So I mean, obviously I'm just joking there. But let me ask you a serious question. If, I said earlier, King Dr. Russell Lee, what if you were, president, the ruler? You make all the rules. You tell me how much is enough. I mean, that's really my problem with this whole argument, is that I don't think you can effectively determine, you or a committee or a commission can say how much is enough. And what do you do if someone goes? So say you set a threshold at you can only have $999 million in net worth. And if you go over that, Is that excess confiscated? Are you subject to criminal sanction? I mean, what happens? I mean, how do you actually do this in practice?
Well, that is a problem. That is a big problem. And Elizabeth Warren had proposed a wealth tax where people are taxed for their net on the net worth, not just based on their income. And I think that would be one idea. I've read also people saying that would be very difficult to enforce and would lead to all kinds of chicanery on the part of people evading taxes through various means. And that's true. And I don't really know exactly what mechanism would be used, but it's something that can be done. I mean, the disparity between the richest and the poorest now is greater than it's been in this country in years, probably 100 years, I bet, since the 20s. And I just think that that should be discouraged through policy. I mean, after World War II, between World War II and 1980, with a high tax rate, the disparity between the pay of CEOs versus ordinary employees was much less. They didn't make multiples of hundreds of times of what their average employee made. As they do now. And I think you can discourage that kind of thing. I think there are other issues too that contribute to it, but we're talking about just the accumulation of wealth. But
again, I just go back to that. You're always going to have that disparity, and you can put in regulations to lessen the disparity, but you're never going to have a situation in a capitalist society where you don't have a disparity. And even, you talk about the 50s where, you had a high tax rate. I mean, it still was a huge disparity between the highest earning individuals back then and the lowest earning. I mean, maybe not as great as it is now. And you did, a lot of the things that occurred during the 50s and 60s when we had a high tax rate did, in fact, help benefit the middle class. And, America did probably enjoy one of its greatest economic growth periods during that time. But what we didn't have during then is the incredible innovation we've seen over the last 20 or so years.
But how can you say that?
Say what?
The adaptation over the last 20 years. We've had adaptation of a technology that became available, and that's always happens, you know.
Well, I was going to make the point that, yeah, I mean, so you maybe can attribute this innovation I'm talking about to enhancements of technology, taking advantage of new technologies. But it does remain true that we've had an incredible period of innovation at the same time that we've had as you put it, the excessive accumulation of wealth. And I don't know if that's coincidental that those things have coincided. I mean, you know, you go back to the late 90s, early 2000s, the initial dot-com bubble, where everybody was starting a new company and, you know, getting wealthy overnight for what seemed to be a lot of absurd ideas. But out of and that bubble burst, but out of the ruins of that bubble, we've gotten a lot of innovative services and things like, you know, that we take for granted now, like Uber and Airbnb and all of this other crap that kind of grew out of the first round of dot-com expansion. And I don't think that a lot of those people would have been on board with that innovation had they not been promised or understood, rather, that at the end of that rainbow was a huge pot of gold. And, you know, the example was set early by Amazon, you know, Bezos. You know, he lost money for the first several years, and ultimately he's the wealthiest person in the world now. I mean, and I think a lot of people have sought to emulate him, and that's led to this innovation. And I think that motivation in almost every instance is the fact that they can make crazy amounts of money. So if you say from the outset that you can't, I know what you said earlier, that you don't think anyone's going to say, well, I'm not going to do this because I can't make $2 billion. I can only make, half a billion. I still think that there is some power there in the unfettered, the promise of unfettered accumulation of wealth.
Yeah, but what is that power, I ask? It really is just a power to say, I mean, Jeff Bezos has, what, $68 billion? If he had $63 billion, nothing would change in his life. I mean, he might not even know it unless someone told him. So there is a point where it doesn't. I mean, the point is that Jeff Bezos can say he has more money than all the other billionaires. So the point is bragging rights for the billionaire class. And if you lower the top amount of money that someone can make, they'd still be able to brag because there'd be far fewer. If you said that no one could have a net worth of more than $1 billion, for example. I mean, I know that's, again, not talking about enforcement or how you'd achieve it, but let's just say arbitrarily you said that. He'd still, if you had $1 billion, you'd still be able to brag, oh, you only have 900 million. Oh, you only have 800 million. None of these people's lifestyles would change. They could still get the accolades that they desire. Because, I mean, after a certain amount of money, more money, only effect it has on you or your life is just being able to say you have more money. I mean, give away more money. Some of that is a matter of just enhancing your brand, so to speak.
So it sounds like you're asking the question that, you know, Bud Fox posed to Gordon Gekko. You know, how many yachts can you jet ski behind, huh?
Well, that is. And what is Gordon Gekko? His mantra was greed. And I think we're living in a Gordon Gekko world where it's just a matter of accumulating wealth for the sake of accumulating wealth. You know, just to beat the other guy, you know. And while I'm for competition, I just don't see how this current situation, and if it continues to worsen over time, I don't see how that's helping anybody in the world we live in.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to have to wrap up this segment now. I think you made some points, but some very valid points, but my overarching point is once you kind of let that genie out of the bottle in the form of capitalism, it's just a hard time. You're going to have a hard time restraining it, and you're going to end up with what we have. And I just want to make clear that I'm not an advocate for wealth disparity. I'm, in fact, quite honestly, not even an advocate for capitalism, but that's another discussion. But I think once you have it and once you're in it, then, hey, all bets are off. So thank you, Russell, for that spirited debate. And we'll move on to our second segment. And here we're going to talk about, and I'll kick this off. Here we're going to talk about some of the different measures that have been discussed regarding a post-coronavirus pandemic world, and how do we put in safeguards to A, ensure that we don't have another flare up of the coronavirus and then have to go back into lockdown and quarantine, and also B, to protect ourselves from future viral threats. And one of the things that I've been thinking about is having a strictly government regulated control over socialization. Now, I know that sounds scary the way I said it. Maybe it, you know, kind of, you know, brings to mind things like 1984, you know, George Orwell's dystopian society, other things like that. But I think that we do have to acknowledge that things aren't going to be the same going forward if we hope to remain safe from this coronavirus and, like I said, potential future viral outbreaks. And so part of what I've been thinking about is a system whereby our socialization is actually monitored and controlled. And I'll just set it out. It's not as scary as it sounds, but basically groups of people will have certain days where they can socialize with their friends and family, and other groups of people will have another day. So for example, if I haven't worked out all the details here yet, but say for example, everyone whose last name starts with letters A through K are able to go out and socialize on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And then the rest of the alphabet would do the Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, and Sundays everyone will stay in, of course. You know, we could cut down on viral spread. We can cut down on large groups. We can cut down on the potential for people to spread amongst each other this, you know, different types of, let's be specific, the coronavirus. And we still can go about having some semblance of normal living. Now, there are a lot of issues with that. I mean, you know, if I'm, you know, I'm a Lee, so I'll be in the, you know, the L through Z bracket. And if I want to hang out with a Brown or a Jones, how do you work that out? So you can have some type of rotating system where you mix and match different people. And I'm just saying the, you know, the last name used to define the group as an example. It could be some other thing. It could be your social security number. It could be your birth date, your day of birth, something like that. You could come up with different variations, or you could do like Belgium actually is doing, and they're allowing what they call social bubbles, where you self-identify your social bubble, you know, say you're 10, 15 people that you socialize with on a regular basis. And you are able to socialize with them. So what do you think about that, Russell?
Well, I mean, I'm for the idea of reducing crowd size and social distancing after this is over. Because, I mean, after it's over, it's not going to be over because the virus isn't going anywhere. And I don't think a vaccination is coming anytime soon to most of the country. So I agree with the sentiment. My problem would come with the enforcement. I mean, it would be an excuse for the government representatives, you know, the police, to just, what do? They stop everyone and say, when's your birthday or whatever criteria you use? What's your last name? Ask everyone for ID. I mean, it would be selectively used as a entry into other things that the police wish to do. I mean, it would be a nightmare for enforcement, you know? I mean, how would you do that? I don't know how you'd go about it. I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, if you're dating, what if you're dating someone, you're a Lee? What if you're dating someone whose last name is an A? Or what if you have a lot of different friends who with different names? I mean, I know that's a little silly and trivial, but I mean, there are other ways to go about it, but how the enforcement is what concerns me. And just like everything else, it would be very selectively enforced on people. I think the people who would bear the brunt of the enforcement would be, you know, the usual people who bear the brunt of enforcement of these kinds of things.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I think that's a valid concern, but I mean, I think we have to do something. And using technology where you have anonymized data, you can maybe get around some of that in that, you know, at least the concern like with singling out certain people. But I do think that at least initially, and honestly, and this is going to sound a little crazy, I think you do need to have very firm and harsh enforcement. And I think once you initially have that, so, you know, if I'm out on a day that I'm not supposed to be out, there's going to be a severe penalty for that. And I think once that example is set, then human behavior will adjust accordingly. And people will realize that, hey, I got to go by it. And I got to abide by the rules. And the reason why I have to abide by the rules is not because, it's going to be an infringement upon my personal freedom, no doubt, but it's for the better good of society. And so we have to, I think, maybe think about certain sacrifices to the things that have been sacrosanct in American society to achieve a better good. And if a lessening of personal freedom is one of those things, then so be it. I know a lot of people won't agree with that, but maybe that's the way we need to go.
I don't know. There would be a lot of backlash, and I think there'd be, not only protests, but I really think that would leave a bad taste in people's mouths. And I wonder, especially the harsh enforcement aspect of it. And I mean, if you look at what we have going on now with the social distance and stay at home orders, most people, I mean, the vast majority of people are doing their best to follow those voluntarily without the harsh enforcement. So I think maybe you could maybe make more of an effort to persuade people initially, and then if you had to go to something more harsh, then you could at some point. But I don't know. I'm just suspicious of the government's tendency to overreach in this kind of situation, use any excuse to promote some other agenda.
Yeah, I mean, and that is definitely a valid concern. We've seen this. I did an editorial in an earlier segment about how, post 9/11, for example, we see a lot of stuff that was implemented that would have been unthinkable, pre 9/11. A lot of infringement on civil liberties, domestically and internationally, that stuff we never would have imagined America doing. So yeah, it's going to be that period of adjustment. And people will have concerns, and I think rightfully so, because I don't think we should ever fully trust our government or anyone, in fact, to do the right thing. But I just don't know what choices we have if we're going to move forward with a functioning society and try to at least enjoy a little bit of what we had before.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with most of the points you're making.
Well, you're not supposed to do that.
Oh, well,
no, I'm just joking.
No, but I mean, you're right. I mean, where's the cutoff between, where does your freedom end? And if it infringes upon my health, and that's what we're really talking about. I mean, sort of like, these protesters going out and saying, oh, I want to get my hair cut. I mean, it's not a question of it's not like they're being imprisoned or their freedoms being restricted just out of some kind of perverse cruelty or the government's desire to assert their power. It's, it's a health crisis. And so I agree that something would have to be done, but just given the government's history, I'd be very concerned about how that would be enforced, and it'd have to be strong protections on that.
So I think unfortunately for the show, I think we probably are on the same page here. I go a little further in investing in the government enforcement authority because I think that without a robust and genuine threat, regulatory threat or enforcement threat, some people are just going to scoff at it and just go about their own business and not, I guess, yeah, like you said, act in their own interest and not in the general interest. So,
well, I think even with a harsh enforcement threat, a lot of people are going to act in their own interest and just do whatever they want. And I think that largely would be the same people, because I think that most people can grasp the concept that there is a greater good, that your actions do affect other people, and will do the responsible thing. The vast majority of people. And I think the people who don't do it are going to do it with or without the harsh enforcement.
Well, not if you give them not if you give them 20 years in jail. Trust me.
they're going to go down in a blaze of bullets then. Right?
some will, and others will stay inside. So, you know, I mean, I'm just, you know, and I am not, you know, pro strict penalties or pro, you know, that kind of stuff by any means. But I do think that having that stick is a great modifier of behavior. It's been proven to be effective in many instances throughout human history. Some instances, no, because in many, you know, sometimes if it's just if it's used arbitrarily, which unfortunately happens too often, the government will enforce something against one group and not another group. We see that all the time. Then it loses its value. But if you're going to have an ideal strict enforcement, uniform enforcement, everybody gets treated the same. Everybody is subject to the same harsh penalties. You know, for example, if your boy Jeff Bezos is out on a second half of the alphabet day, then Bezos should be, you know, sanctioned. So, you know, if everybody is subject to the same penalties and enforcement, then yeah.
But I think we should all be given pet unicorns too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I know that is what it is. That kind of, I guess, goes back to the original, the initial subject that obviously you're always going to have a bit of preferential treatment if you have a certain status. So that, I hate to say that is what it is, but that is what it is.
Yeah, so we've done full circle here, huh?
We've come full circle here, yeah. So, hey, so I think this has been a great debate. I look forward to doing some more of these. And, you know, if anyone there has any, you know, any of the listeners have any questions or comments or anything, feel free to get in touch with me at blastpodzine@gmail.com. You can submit any questions or comments or anything, and we'll definitely be glad to get back to you on that. So wrapping up, thank you again, Russell, for participating in this segment. I think it went well. I'm looking forward to listening to it and hearing what it actually sounds like. And hopefully, you know, everyone who, all of the listeners are found it informational and enjoyable as well.
Well, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure. And for the listeners out there, don't feel bad for Mondo because I bested him in the debate. It's the way it goes. Okay.
It's the way it goes. What are you going to do? Thanks again, Russell. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in to Blast Podzine's Wide World of Retorts. Take care.